Boulder is one of many cities across the U.S. experiencing a lifeguard shortage. This may not seem like the end of the world for affluent families who can swim at private pools, but for low-income families and families of color, it means more children and adults will never learn to swim. Across the U.S., 64% of African American, 45% of Hispanic, Latino, and 40% of Caucasian children have few to no swimming skills. Drowning is the leading cause of death for children between the ages of 1 and 4. I spoke with Dr. Linda Kwan, a pediatric emergency medicine physician at Seattle's Children's Hospital and professor of pediatrics at the University of Washington School of Medicine, about pool closures and the impact they're having on millions of families. Dr. Kwan, so to start off, one of the main reasons I wanted to talk to you is that in Boulder, we have a major public pool, Spruce Pool, that's now been closed for 2 summers in a row. It was a very popular pool. It's right in the middle of town. And according to the city, they didn't have enough lifeguards, 90 out of the 140 they would have needed in order to open it. So I wanted to ask you, is this lifeguard shortage part of a larger trend? Are other towns and cities having to close pools because they don't have enough lifeguards?
This is a problem throughout the country. Everybody is talking about it in the aquatics community. Everybody has had a problem. Actually, over the past few years, this problem has been brewing. It's worsened during COVID when the pools actually shut down for 2 years. But we're going to continue to have a problem until we really put more resources into this.
Why can't they get more lifeguards? What's the problem?
I think that pay is one problem. And so many places have increased markedly the pay that they provide the lifeguards. Training is a cost and time, and then just getting, you know, people interested in it. But the whole water safety issue has been under-resourced in many of our communities, and it's time that we actually address it. And then I think there's another piece that we can bring up here, and that is that we have really whole communities that also don't have the economic means to take swim lessons, to pay to go to a pool. And so, I mean, even the public pools cost some money to go to. So that potential groups of students, high school students and others, just haven't had it on their radar as an activity. For instance, when I was growing up, which was a long time ago, growing up in the tenements, you didn't think about going to swim lessons. You didn't think about ever being a lifeguard. And then being an Asian, that was not rational activity that one did. You know, I was supposed to study and grow up to be a doctor.
Yeah. Some of the income and racial disparity statistics I was looking at about swimming are pretty alarming. So about 78% of African American children grow up in households where parents have no or low swimming skills. And I imagine because of this, African American children are about 5 times more likely to drown than Caucasian children of the same age group. And then 79% of children and households with incomes less than $50,000 don't know how to swim. I mean, what is not having the opportunity to learn how to swim or go to a pool mean for all of these families?
This is an important question to ask. What happens when you don't have access? We can look at some communities who were denied access. For instance, the Black community was denied access until the desegregation laws happened. And that community has borne the brunt of that history by not being as familiar with the water culture, not having entry into water culture related jobs, and they have higher drowning rates. Whites have the lowest drowning rates of all. Native Americans, Alaska Natives, have the highest in our country. And Blacks have higher drowning rates than whites. The ratio is sometimes, depending on the age group, 2 to 1. And the disparities are greatest, most marked, in swimming pools for children over the age of 4. So the reasons, again, have nothing to do with their physical or physiological abilities. It's that they are from communities that have not had the historical background, the cultural background, the family's comfort around water and access.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to recognize that something like swimming is really passed down from one generation to another. I mean, in a lot of ways, is really tracing the privilege that's passed down from one generation to another, or not passed down. And that privilege is having access to a pool, which is really a luxury.
It is a luxury. We have made it increasingly a luxury, and our communities have worked very hard to you know, increase bike paths where I live, running trails where I live, but they have not put those resources into the aquatics.
Okay, so my final question is definitely a pretty serious pivot, but since I have you here, I want to ask, does the whole teaching a baby to swim by throwing them in the pool technique hold any water?
There is no data showing that it works, and it is associated with greater fear of water. And those children do not, when they study them long term, they actually perform their swimming tests half as well as the children who have been trained in the more traditional, friendlier manner. I would like to add that the American Academy of Pediatrics has been very focused in the past year on the need to address and prevent trauma in children, because we now know that there's very clearly a long-term effect of that in many ways, in their interactions and their trust in their ability to bond later on. And so we have concern about that.
Okay, so don't throw your baby in the pool. Also, we need to open back up public pools.
Yes.
Dr. Linda Kwan is a pediatric emergency medicine physician at the Seattle Children's Hospital and professor of pediatrics at the University of Washington School of Medicine. Thank you so much for talking with me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.